Listening to the English language news of Khan, the Israeli Public Broadcasting Corporation.
It's 8 p.m. in Israel, Tuesday, April 16th, 2024. In the headlines, as the war cabinet convenes for the third consecutive day, pressure mounts on Israel against escalating conflict with Iran. Two explosive-laden drones hit near Kiryat Shmona, injuring three people. Rockets are launched toward the Western Galilee. An airstrike in South Lebanon kills a senior Hezbollah commander behind the rocket and missile launches. On the 193rd day of the Gaza War, IDF forces target dozens of terrorists as the military prepares for an operation in Rafah. EasyJet cancels all flights to Israel until the autumn. The Jewish National Fund is inviting the public to visit its forests during the upcoming Passover holiday. And the weather, much hotter with sharav conditions across the country. Good evening. This is Arye O'Sullivan with the news. The war cabinet is set to convene this evening, the third time in the past 3 days, as Israel mulls a response to the unprecedented Iranian attack directly on Israel early Sunday of more than 300 rockets, cruise missiles, and drones. While that strike caused no deaths and little damage, thanks to the air defenses and countermeasures of Israel and its allies, including Jordan, it has increased concerns of regional war spreading beyond Gaza and South Lebanon. But meanwhile, on the northern front, the IDF announced this evening that it had carried out a strike, eliminating the Hezbollah commander of the coastal sector in South Lebanon, Ismail Yusuf Baz. An Air Force aircraft attacked the vehicle Baz was traveling in near the city of Tsur. He had been, among other things, promoting the launch of rockets and anti-tank missiles into Israel, security sources said. Hezbollah confirmed his death. This is the 275th death in the organization's ranks since the beginning of the war. In a separate report, another vehicle was attacked in southern Lebanon, killing three people. The target of this attack was also a field commander in Hezbollah. This came after two explosive-laden drones launched from Lebanon hit near Beit Hillel in the Galilee Panhandle, lightly injuring three people. The drone infiltration did not set off any alarms, and the IDF said it was examining this. This afternoon, rockets were launched toward the western Galilee, with alerts going off in Shlomi, Mitzuba, Chanita, and Ya'ara. There were no reports of any injuries or damage. On day 193 of the Israel-Hamas war, Israeli forces carried out raids in the central Gaza Strip. Several terrorists were killed by tank fire. Over the past day, the Israeli Air Force, fighter jets, and other aircraft attacked dozens of terror infrastructure sites, tunnel shafts, and buildings where terrorists were located. Meanwhile, preparations continue for an Israeli military operation in Rafah, where several Hamas battalions remain. Defense Minister Yoav Gallant last night held a consultation on the civilian preparations required for the entry of Israeli security forces into Rafah. The emphasis was on the evacuation of Palestinian civilians and expansion of means to bring food and medical assistance into the Gaza Strip. Earlier, reports this week said that IDF was due to begin carrying out initial steps this week in preparation for the Rafah offensive, but Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu decided on the delay at the last minute. Khan reports the reason was in order to ensure Israel receives full American backing in facing the Iranian attack. Washington has stated clear objectives over a broad military offensive in Rafah. The impasse in the hostage talks, 133 hostages remain hostage in Gaza. Some are no longer alive. Reports last night said Hamas's latest counterproposal to the framework put forward by the mediators cut in half the number of hostages it is willing to release during their first phase of a 6 week truce, from 40 to 20, on the grounds that only that number meets the humanitarian criteria for release. Hamas is also calling for the release of more Palestinian prisoners in exchange for fewer hostages, as well as freedom of movement for Gazans returning to their home in the enclave, and a comprehensive IDF withdrawal from the Strip. An Israeli source told CNN the Hamas position signals that the terror group's Gaza leader Yahya Sinwar does not want a deal and is seeking to exploit disagreement between the U.S. and Israel over Israeli military operations in Gaza and domestic pressure on the Israeli government. The UN Human Rights Office says Israel is still imposing unlawful restrictions on humanitarian relief for Gaza. Ravina Shamdasani, a spokesperson for the UN Human Rights Office, asserted in a press briefing in Geneva today that Israel continues to impose unlawful restrictions on the entry and distribution of humanitarian assistance and to carry out widespread destruction of civil infrastructure. Well, a government spokesman rejected this afternoon and said that at this moment there were over 450 trucks languishing on the Gazan side of the border because the UN agencies were unable to distribute them. Activists from the Tzav 9 movement and families of hostages held in Gaza went to the Allenby crossing to Jordan last night to block aid trucks bound for the Gaza Strip. Early this month, Israel authorized the overland route from Jordan in response to international calls to significantly boost the flow of assistance into Gaza. Now to the Israel-Iran tensions. Iran's president, Ibrahim Raisi, warns that any attack on the country's interests will be met with a, quote, forceful, painful, and broad response against anyone who was involved in it. In a phone call with the Emir of Qatar, the Iranian president said that the blind support of Israel by some Western countries is the blame for the tension in the region. The United States estimates that the Israeli response to Iran's Sunday morning launch of hundreds of drones and missiles at Israel will be limited in scope and apparently directed at Iranian military forces and pro-Iranian militias outside of Iran. The NBC network said the assessment is based on conversations between U.S. and Israeli officials that happened before Iran fired more than 300 drones and missiles at Israel Saturday night, 99% of which were intercepted by Israel and allied forces. The report stressed that Washington does not know what the Israeli war cabinet decided in the wake of Saturday night's attack. Khan reporter says that following the night of interceptions, Israel conveyed a message to countries in the region that its response to Iran will not endanger them or their stability. The countries defined as regional partners, Gulf states, Jordan, and Egypt, are concerned of appearing as cooperating with Israel and the possibility that an Israeli response would draw an Iranian retaliation directed against them as well. Well, IDF Chief of Staff Lieutenant General Herzi Halevi says Iran will face the consequences of its actions and Israel will choose its response accordingly. In an English language statement released last night, Halevi thanked international partners who work with Israel in intercepting the Iranian aerial attack on Israel Saturday night and the effort the IDF has dubbed Operation Iron Shield.
Over the weekend, Iran launched a large-scale attack on Israel. Over 350 ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, armed drones, and rockets were fired from Iranian soil, as well as Iraq, Yemen, and Lebanon, towards the state of Israel. Across the skies of the Middle East, a coalition was activated to counter this attack, marking the start of the IDF's Operation Iron Shield. The Israel Defense Forces, together with the United States Central Command, the British and the French Armed Forces, and other partners, operated together in real time, in the air, on the ground, and at sea. Defense systems were activated, the threats were intercepted, and Iran's attack on Israel failed. Operation Iron Shield proved the strength of our ironclad cooperation. I want to thank all our international partners who stood up to Iran's aggression. Iran's attack has created new opportunities for cooperation in the Middle East. We are closely assessing the situation. We remain at our highest level of readiness. Iran will face the consequences for its actions. We will choose our response accordingly. The IDF remains ready to counter any threat from Iran and its terror proxies as we continue our mission to defend the State of Israel.
IDF Chief of General Staff, Lieutenant General Herzi Halevi. Well, IDF spokesman, Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari, displayed to the foreign media today the remnants of some of the Iranian rockets that landed in Israel. He said that firing 110 ballistic missiles directly to Israel will not get off scot-free. The ones who fired 100 ballistic missiles directly to Israel will not get off scot-free, he said. We will respond in our time, in our place, in the way that we will choose. Here are some excerpts of his remarks.
We're here with the body of one of the ballistic missiles that was launched from Iran directly to Israel. These ballistic missiles are ones that has 500 kilos of explosives in the warhead. We're talking about over 110 ballistic missiles coming from Iran aiming towards Israel. These are 60 tons of explosives directly to Israel. Iran knew that when she was firing over 110 ballistic missiles, besides the cruise missiles, the rockets, the drones, firing 110 ballistic missiles is an escalation to the region, is a dangerous escalation. If those ballistic missiles would have hit Israel, it would cause a dangerous consequences to the region. Something else has happened. This coalition is directing a message to Iran. We will not allow this aggression in the region. This coalition is an opportunity for the Middle East, a strategic opportunity for the Middle East, for countries who share the same threat from Iran. Firing 110 ballistic missiles directly to Israel will not get scot-free. We will respond in our time, in our place, in the way that we will choose. We don't just have defensive capabilities, we were proven on Saturday night. We have offensive capabilities, and we will know what to do, and when to do, and how to do.
IDF spokesperson Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari. Amid the belligerent rhetoric over a possible Israeli retaliation on Iran, there has been a flurry of diplomatic activity that appears aimed at diffusing the tensions between Israel and Iran. World leaders have urged Israel not to retaliate after Iran launched hundreds of drones, ballistic missiles, and cruise missiles over the weekend in an unprecedented revenge mission that pushed the Middle East closer to a regional-wide war. Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi told Russian leader Vladimir Putin by telephone today that Tehran strikes on Israel were limited and that the Islamic Republic was not interested in escalation. The Kremlin said this. President Putin expressed hope that all sides would show reasonable restraint and so prevent a fall towards a confrontation that could have, quote, catastrophic consequences for the entire region, according to a Kremlin statement. Iran's Deputy Foreign Minister Ali Bagheri Kani told state TV on Monday night that Tehran's response to any Israeli counterattack would come in, quote, a matter of seconds, as Iran will not wait for another 12 days to respond. And out of possible fear of an Israeli strike on Iran's energy exports, Iran's Deputy Oil Minister Morteza Shahmerizai told a conference in Moscow that his country was working to ensure that energy exports in the Middle East region are carried out without interruption after an attack on Israel. All countries and players should adhere to the principles of no harm to energy producers to ensure stability, he said. Where Germany's foreign minister, Annalena Baerbock, is expected to travel to Israel later today or early tomorrow for what she said were efforts to de-escalate the situation here. Speaking to reporters in Berlin, after meeting with her Jordanian counterpart, Ayman Safadi, she says she will push for further European Union sanctions against Iran, specifically pointing out the country's drone program. The Jordanian foreign minister used the press conference to blast Israel, saying Prime Minister Netanyahu wants to steal attention away from Gaza by escalating his confrontation with Iran. Nevertheless, Safadi did acknowledge that Jordanian forces participated in the interception of Iranian missiles and drones because these attacks also directly endangered Jordan, he said. We will not accept being turned into another theater of war. A Khan reporter says that several world leaders requested to arrange conversations with Prime Minister Netanyahu in recent days, but were turned down by the Prime Minister's office. This based on the assessment that they would seek to pressure him to refrain from striking back at Iran. With this, the Prime Minister's office issued a statement last night that Netanyahu had spoken with the U.S. House of Representatives Majority Leader, Republican Congressman Steve Scalzi, who expressed support for any decision that Israel makes in light of the Iranian attack. A post was also uploaded to the Prime Minister's of Israel's official account on X last night, expressing deep appreciation of the support of the United States, Britain, France, and others in thwarting the Iranian attack against Israel. Well, government spokesperson David Mentzer said today that Israel would defend itself regardless of any foreign pressures on the country and not to retaliate to the Iranian attack this past week.
We've made quite clear that this country will be defending itself. The Prime Minister has said whether defensively or offensively. There is unity in this country about the terror which we face, which we know is orchestrated from Iran through their proxies, from Hamas in the south to Hezbollah in the north to the Houthis in the Straits of the Red Sea to the other terrorists operating from Iraq and Yemen. I won't be sharing our decisions about the next move, but needless to say, this country will be defended. It's the primary role of every government to defend its citizens, no less for the people of Israel.
Government spokesperson David Mentzer. But together with European allies, Washington toughened economic and political sanctions on Iran in an attempt to persuade Israel not to abstain from violent retaliation. U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said the United States would use sanctions and work with allies to keep the disturbing Iran's malign and destabilizing activity. Israel's foreign minister, Israel Katz, says he was leading a diplomatic attack, writing to 32 countries to ask them to place sanctions on Iran's missile program and follow Washington in proscribing the Revolutionary Guard Corps as a terrorist group. The United Nations nuclear watchdog chief said that he was concerned about possible Israeli targeting of Iranian nuclear facilities, but that International Atomic Energy Agency inspections of Iranian facilities would resume today. International Atomic Energy Agency Director General Rafael Grossi said Iran had closed its nuclear facilities on Sunday after security considerations, and while they reopened yesterday, he kept IAEA inspectors away until we can see that the situation is completely calm. Here's an excerpt from what he had to say.
Well, of course, we are always concerned about this possibility. What I can tell you is that our inspectors in Iran were informed by the Iranian government that on the yesterday, all the nuclear facilities that we are inspecting every day would remain closed on security considerations. They would be reopened today for the continued inspections. I decided to stay, to let the inspectors not return until we see that the situation is completely calm. We are going to resume tomorrow. So what I can say is that this has not had an impact on our inspection activity. But of course, we always call for extreme restraint. Actually, what we were discussing here, which was not about Iran or the Middle East, is a tangible example of the need to avoid any physical attack against any nuclear facility. So, but we are there. We continue our work.
UN Nuclear Watchdog Director Rafael Grossi. Well, as the War Cabinet weighs Israel's possible response to Iran's aerial attack on Saturday, retired Navy Commander Dr. Eyal Pinko says that Israel should act in a manner that is smart, not right. In remarks in a briefing hosted by the Jerusalem Press Club, Pinko, who's a senior research fellow at the Begin Sadat Center of Strategic Studies and a researcher and lecturer in intelligence, cyber, national security, and maritime security, said Iran's direct attack on Israel was abnormal and a strong counterstrike risks regional escalation.
This is totally abnormal behavior of Iran because the Iranian doctrine, the Iranian philosophy is what we call a non-contact warfare. Or indirect warfare. And it means that Iran is not fighting directly with its enemies. Iran sending someone else to die, to sacrifice himself as Hamas, as Hezbollah, as I said, the Yemen Houthis. And the way that Iran was directly firing missiles and drones towards Israel, this is totally abnormal behavior of Iran. In this manner.
So turning over to the Israeli side, how do you think Israel views this situation strategically, of course, Israel was able to intercept most of the projectiles, as well as the allies that participated in the efforts as well. What do you think is going on right now in Jerusalem in terms of, you know, the next steps ahead, and what strategy it should be taking?
There are many assessments of what is going to happen. There are many voices inside the Israeli government saying that Israel should react against the Iranian attack. If we need to maybe to adjust or remember, 2 weeks ago, Iranian highly ranked general was killed in a building near the embassy. I spoke yesterday with many people from foreign media. They told me, yes, but Israel hit an embassy. So the answer is no. First, Israel didn't take any responsibility for the assassination of this general, and he was not stayed in any kind of embassy. It was near the embassy. So the reaction from Iran came as a retaliation for this killing of the general. And as I said, in Jerusalem, there are many voices calling to react, because if we understand the cultural point of view of Iran, Iran understand that after this kind of attack, even though 99% of the projectiles and were destructed, even though Iran see this kind of operation as a huge success, it doesn't matter, because let's say that 50 or 60% were intercepted in Iraq and in Syria. The other were intercepted in the Israeli borders. There was one projectile that fell in Air Force Base, causing almost no damages. But from the Iranian perspective, this is a victory. This is not something which is a failure. And then now, people want to escalate the situation in order to show Iran that they cannot do whatever they want. I do believe that because of the U.S. aid and the British as well, the pressure on Israel will be such as not to react at all. Israel is ready to react, but I think nothing will happen. This is my own belief. Even though I'm always saying that in the Middle East, you can always forecast the past. You cannot forecast the future. I think that the next day or two, everyone here is very under huge tension. I do believe there is no, if there will be something, it will be in a very soft way, something like a cyber attack or something like that. There will be no, from my assessment for now, some kind of kinetic reaction.
If you're looking at it from an Iranian point of view, from the point of view of the Islamic Republic, can Israel afford not to react in a way that will deter them? Israel lost quite a bit of deterrence on the 7th of October. Is this not one of the considerations that should be taken when the country was under direct attack from Iran for the very first time?
Yeah, there is always, like, we drive on the road and we say it's better to be smart than to be right. I think the right way to go ahead is to attack Iran, to show the deterrence, to bring back the deterrence, as we do with Hezbollah. Hezbollah is attacking, we are attacking back and all. I think in this situation now, it will not be the right way to go. I think it's not good to do that. It's not smart way to do the things. Because first we need to remember that the IDF is still in the Gaza Strip. There are plans to go into Rafah to eliminate Hamas military capabilities, which I think it's much more important for the Israeli security, the tactical and strategical point of view. So now to go to escalate it and to go back to Iran, because I don't think it will be smart, because Iran will react again, and it will become like an avalanche. I think we don't need it now in the Israeli situation. We understand if it will go there, Hezbollah will join much harder into this game, and I think it will open a global campaign, because U.S. and the U.K. will not stand aside, France as well. And this from the other side, Russia and China, and it will become a situation that I think the world cannot afford itself now. And in this manner, I think that we should be smart and not right.
One reporter is asking about the participation of other states, including Jordan itself. We saw those pictures of Jordanian pilots even taking part. Do you think this is something that will impact Iran's ability to be the large player in the area that it intends to be within the Muslim world? What should we be making out of this participation of moderate Sunni states or otherwise?
Yes. First, I would like to say that I was totally surprised from the Jordanian act. I think that it comes from two sides. The first one, Jordan is pretty much depends on the U.S. and most of the Jordanian military equipment and platforms are American platforms. And this is something that I believe that the U.S. Came and told the Jordanian king to move forward with that, to help Israel. Secondly, if you see what is happening in Jordan, Iran in the last few years, especially in the last year, is trying to involve in what is happening in Jordan. Iran is trying to mess up with social media, with the Palestinian over there in Jordan, and trying to shuffle the cards inside Jordan. The king understands it well. So even though the king is on the media, is speaking about the East Jerusalem and Gaza Strip and all, he is afraid of what is happening inside his country. But you see that below the shadows, once again, we go there, that below the shadows, the cooperation between Israel and Jordan is a very good cooperation in the economical world, in the military intelligence. So the connections, the ties are very strong. And also, Jordan is also worried about the Iranian involvement as a Sunni country against the Shia. And if we look on a broader aspect, what is happening within Hamas and Israel, we are only players on the chessboard. And the chessboard between, I will say, two dimensions. One is the dimension of the war between the West and East, the bloc, the Russian, Chinese, Iranian, North Korea, and Pakistan in the bloc, with the other bloc, which is European NATO. This is one dimension. And the second dimension is the war in between the Islam, which is between the Shia countries led by Iran and the Sunni countries as Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, UAE, Jordan, and Morocco. And you see the Abraham Accords, which brought prosperity into the region and peace to the region until the murderous Hamas attack on October 7th. So I think this is also part of this multidimensional war between the East and West and the Islam.
Retired Navy Commander Dr. Eyal Pinko. More news coming up, but taking us up to midway headlines is this song by Tuna called Ben Ha'ir Lepaldes, Between the City and the Orchards.
צהל נכנס לעזה, נסעתי קצת לאבא על רקע צ'קה לקה, פקה פקה, מדה זקה חוזה נגמר שזה סימן שנסיים את הסגה ואין לי גג שזה סימן שבטח אין לי קרקע וגם אין לי מוטיבציה וגם אין לי מצב רוח כאילו לא מספיק מתוח, נכנסים לעוד ויכוח אז אין מקום אחד כרגע, אין מקום בטוח כמו מאוחזב מהעולם מרגיש שאין פיקוח כמו מאוחזב מהעולם דירקתי את האירוח מה היה להם כל כך דחוף לי גוס מעט תפוח מבכלל מת על שינוי, לא אני חורף בא, אני בנדודי לא אני, סופרסטאר הומלס, קרניבור, צמחוני מהבית להורים, משם לאיירבי-אנבי, בין העיר לפרדס, בדרכים, תחת אש לאן תשוב הרוח זה עוד אפשר לנחש, שעת קידוד מטושטש, אז הרף הזה מוקדש, לכל מי שכמוני מחפש לכל מי שצריך מסלול חדש ותקוע בבירות בגלל השיבושים בווייס
מה שנשאר זה לחבר את מה שנשאר מאחור בין העיר לפרדס שוב אני מחפש מקום אלא נעים לי לחזור
שעל המייק אני נוח בינינו עדיין מנסה בכוח כאב מדי לראות הבית פה הוא רק קירות הופעות גדולות מאוד היה לאן לברוח רק שהכל עצר אני הקלתי מה עברתי לאט לאט הפכתי לאחד שלא הכרתי נעלמתי לעצמי כדי שלא יחב לך כדי שלא יחב לי כן זה מאוד רומנטי הלב נשבר אבל הגיע הזמן הזה שהבחר בי הבית ריק עכשיו כמו שסלם הרק מברבי בית 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 אשתי בית בליבי לא היה לי לא ידעתי שאפשר זה טבעי לא ידעתי שמגיע לי מקום גם מבלי שאצטרך להציל את כל מי שסביבי מה זה בית 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 לא קירות לא סירים לא ריחות מוכרים לא הנוף הצפוני, הדרומי, זה רק איפה שנעים להיות אני וגדרות לא נפרצים ככה באופן פתאומי ולא יהיה אחד וגם לא אמצא אחד אם לא יהיה הבית של עצמי
מה שנשאר זה לחבק את מה שנשאר מאחור בין העיר לפרדס אני מחפש מקום אליו נעים לי לחזור
And now a midway look at the major news headlines today as the war cabinet convenes for the third consecutive day. Pressure mounts on Israel against escalating a conflict with Iran. Two explosive-laden drones hit near Kiryat Shmona, injuring three people. Rockets are launched toward the western Galilee. An Israeli airstrike in South Lebanon kills a senior Hezbollah commander behind the rocket and missile launches. On day 193 of the Gaza War, IDF forces target dozens of terrorists as the military prepares for an operation in Rafah. EasyJet cancels all its flights to Israel until the autumn. And the Jewish National Fund is inviting the public to visit its forests during the upcoming Passover holiday. And the weather much hotter with Shirav conditions across the country. Low-cost carrier EasyJet has officially announced it has suspended flight service to Israel through October 27th in light of the ongoing security situation. The airline had previously announced it was suspending flights for a few weeks. The airline is the fourth largest in the world and tens of thousands of Israelis are said to be affected. EasyJet said ticket holders will be offered other options including refunds. The artists and curators representing Israel at this year's Venice Biennale have announced they won't open the Israeli Pavilion exhibition until there is a ceasefire in Gaza and an agreement to release hostages. The exhibition in the Israeli Pavilion had been titled Motherland by artist Ruth Patir. A sign posted in the pavilion today ahead of Saturday's scheduled opening of the Contemporary Art Fair read, "The artists and curators of the Israeli Pavilion will open the exhibition when a ceasefire and hostage release agreement is reached." Patir told Khan it was a very difficult decision, but she considered it impossible to go on with business as usual and wanted to give her voice to strengthen the protests. Israel is among 88 national participants in the 60th Venice Biennale, which runs from April 20th to November 24th. Thousands of artists, curators, and critics have signed an open letter calling on the Biennale to exclude Israel from this year's show to protest Israel's war in Gaza. Italy's cultural minister firmly backed Israel's participation. Back here at home, Jerusalem police overnight arrested six Palestinians from Judea and Samaria who were in the capital's Mea Shearim neighborhood illegally. During the arrest, rioting erupted and residents threw planks and bottles at police and sprayed them with pepper gas. The personal archive of the late Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks has arrived at the National Library of Israel. Some 50 boxes containing the personal archives of the renowned religious leader, philosopher, and respected moral voice were received today in Jerusalem. Once cataloged, the National Library of Israel intends to provide extensive access to researchers, according to the terms agreed upon by the Sachs family. The fourth Sachs Conversation, which is an annual event honoring Rabbi Sachs's enduring impact as a global moral voice, will be held at the National Library of Israel on November 21st, 2024. But the ongoing war in Gaza has exacerbated food insecurity among vulnerable populations in Israel, due, among other reasons, to the significant blow sustained by the agricultural sector. Since the outbreak of the war, the food rescue organization Lekit Israel, the National Food Bank, has worked not only to provide food to those in need, but also to support hard-hit farmers. With the approach of the Passover holiday, Lekit Israel founder and chairman Joseph Gittler spoke to our reporter Naomi Segal about the most acute needs at this time.
Can you give us a snapshot of food insecurity in Israel from the different components at this time?
Yeah, sure. And thank you for having me on. Look, I think we're now 6 months since the war started. So I would say things are have started to normalize a little bit, meaning outside of the north and the hardest hit areas next to the Gaza border, a lot of people have moved back to their homes, which means for the Lekits of the world to work with local partners, a lot of those local partners are now back in business. And so we can serve food through them again, whereas over the past few months, we've had to hustle to serve the poor where they are, because certainly their situation did not improve because of the war. Another major difference, just to add for Lekit, is our normal activities, which is rescuing excess crops and excess cooked meals, went almost to zero in the weeks and months after October 7th. And while not completely back to normal, we're still purchasing a hefty amount of fruits and vegetables. A lot of our normal rescue activities have returned. So a little bit of normalization for the time being, which is good, especially now when there's always so much increased demand around Passover.
The war has also impacted farmers themselves. Certainly, they were having a lot of difficulty working the fields. There has also been a return to that in some areas, including in the Gaza periphery. Has Lekit been part of those efforts with volunteers coming and helping out?
Sure. We've been super involved. We've placed 80,000 volunteers since October 7th, primarily working in the south. More than that, we've paid for over 2,000 buses since October 7th, whenever it's been safe. Now there's no more of a permission from the army, at least over the last couple of months. But we've worked closely hand in hand with the farmers and the army to get volunteers down there. We've provided debit cards to farmers who've been hard hit. And now we just started a large program together with Strauss Elite, where we'll be providing millions of dollars in grants to hard-hit farmers who need to buy, let's say, a new pickup truck. Their truck was damaged by rocket fire, or they don't have the money to buy seeds. So we're really doing everything to help farmers. We're normally, really, frankly, farmers just help Lekit by giving us their excess crops. It's been a 180-degree turn, with the biggest and most important piece being that we've bought tens of millions of pounds of fruits and vegetables that farmers were having trouble selling just because of temporary changes in the market. You know, no tourism, and if you sell to the hotel trade, you might have gotten crops stuck that you couldn't sell. Lekit came to the rescue for many farmers.
That connects to my next question. From your perspective and connections with this sector, how were they impacted? You mentioned some of the points. What about simply the harvesting of the crops? This is from a perspective of harvest waste.
Oh, my God. Okay, so you have things that were never harvested, waste, and that was primarily for security reasons. Let's take the entire north, where essentially farming has been put on hold since October 7th. In the south, there was short-term damage in that sense that you couldn't harvest. A lot of that has been fixed by now. The bigger, longer-term issue in the south was fields that were damaged by rocket fire and then fields that were damaged by military, like my son in his tank, driving his tank over fields. And so now that's a big job for farmers and the government to rehabilitate those fields. And you're talking about tens of thousands of dunams that were damaged. And that's an impact on our food security, food pricing, imports, and we can go down the line. It's just the repercussions are massive.
So where do you see, where does Leckett see the most acute needs and what can be done or what should be done about them?
Okay, so I think the most acute need is going to be with farmers on the northern border, where basically they've been knocked out of work completely. That's simply going to, they're just going to need money to survive. And I'll say more than that. We need to be able to convince farmers in the north and farmers who've been hard hit elsewhere that we care about them, that we love them, that we want them to continue farming, which is often a difficult business because the state of Israel, as we know, stands always in a very tricky place, the history of the Jewish people. We need to have our own food supply. And so private individuals, the government, amutot, need to come together to make sure that farmers feel that if they get back into this, once things calm down, that they're not going to be let down and have financial issues. So that could be cash transfers. That could be interest-free loans, government support, maybe canceling debt, all that kind of stuff we need because our food security issues in this country are different, sadly, I would say, than many other countries in the world.
And that's from a policy perspective. From an individual's perspective, what can people do to help?
Okay, so I think one great way to help, besides volunteering when we come, we need endless volunteers still in the South primarily. Leckett is and will continue to raise funds for this farmer grant program. And I think that is a great use of stuck up charitable dollars now because that money will go to help keep farmers on their feet, either by buying their excess crops that they can't sell or by helping them buy products that they need or vehicles or tractors, because we need to show them the love and keep them in business for our own sake, frankly.
And what about families? How acute is the need during these times?
So look, I think happily our unemployment continues to remain relatively low. Most people are working. Wages have stayed pretty consistent, which is good. But food prices, and this is really the bummer in Israel, food prices here were always more expensive than the rest of the OECD, and they've become more so since the war started and oil prices have gone up and countries haven't been selling to us. And so it's made food specifically more difficult for those that even a few percent change in price has a big impact on. So there's a lot of need, a lot of demand, and we're going to push very hard. We have less than a week till Passover. We're going to do whatever we can to get as much food into the system. And of course, I invite your listeners to help us do that.
Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you, Naomi. Happy and hopefully quiet holidays to everyone.
Leckett Israel, Joseph Gittler. We have more news coming up, but first this song, Ach Milat Mafteach, Oh, the Keyword by Eric Einstein.
כשנתתי לך שעה, בלי נתת את חיי. כשנתתי לך דמעה, את נתת לי חיוך. ושכחתי את ימי, לפנייך לפניי. אך איך קולי נהנה, אך איזה קסם בינינו מונח. אך כמה טוב לי ורע, חדר סגור שוב נפתח. כשנגעתי בכתפך את קרבת את שפתיי, והרעת בגופך התגבר בתוכי. ועצמתי את עיניי, בידייך בידיו. אך איך קולי נענח, אך איזה קסם בינינו מונח. אך כמה טוב לי ורע,
חדר סגור שוב נפתח לתאר מה שבי צומח אין מילה בתנה רק היא מילה כמילת מפתח כשאני יודעת שאני זה גם את זה גם שנינו זה בינך וזה ביני כל השאר לא חשוב והלב היה נרגש ונולדנו מחדש אך איך קולי איזה קסם בינינו מונח אך כמה טוב לי ורע חדר סגור שוב נפתח
אריק איינשטיין. The upcoming Passover holiday is a great excuse to get out into nature and enjoy some of Israel's natural beauty, particularly now as spring is at its height. Keren Keyamet Lisrael, the Jewish National Fund, has readied its forest for visitors. We spoke with Michael Ben Abu, director of the Israel Fundraising Department of the Keren Keyamet Lisrael, about some suggested places to visit and events. What can you recommend for Israelis to do?
Basically, we offer a spring festival at the KKLJM Forest with wide range of Israeli and Passover-related experiences, music, happenings, workshops, and all kind of activities for the entire family, which is mostly targeted for the families with children, mm-hmm. but not only.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that all activities are free of charge, yet one has to sign up in advance at our toll-free number, which is Kav Laya, the forest line, which is 1-800-350-550. So okay. It's 1-800-350-550.
Where is this? All over the country or in certain specific locations?
It's all over the country. We try to cover the south, the central area of Israel, and the north, of course. And let's start with the variety of the happenings which are taking place. At Chof HaKarmel, mm-hmm. Carmel shoreline, we have an activity with visiting the cave trail, walking tour, where the Neandertal man was there. So it would be an interesting tour, walking tour. We have at Lavi Forest, we have at Park Ha'Yarden, in which we'll have a theater play for children about the electricity making because this is where Aram Naharaim, where the first PowerPoint plan was created. In the central area, we have a Shemesh picnic area and the Givat Yeshayah, which is going to be a unique activity with archaeology and the history workshop with making mosaics, etc.
Really? Where? That Givat Yeshayahu, the Moshav, and the Ella Valley?
We have our offices, regional offices, where the headquarters of the local forest, and this is where it's going to be.
Nice.
At Ilanot Botanical Garden, which has over 350 species of trees, we will have activities related to Pesach. And also at the Hulda Forest, we have a music concert at night. And so this is also not only for families with children. In the south, we have some unique activities. This time, at Gilat, at the Eshel Pesach happenings, where we will have the ability for children to re-experience Exodus or Yetziat Mitzrayim,
nice.
Coming out of Egypt, like we will play the entire Yetziat Mitzrayim.
Okay.
And, of course, it's a holiday of freedom, Chag HaFirut. And what will be also offered is the Mimuna festivity at Ofakim Park, where the children will be able to bake pitas and mofletas in the forest. And basically, it's a lot of fun and giving the opportunity for the families with children to enjoy. And this is not only for children, because we offer a lot of guided tours. All the information can be found at Kavlaya, the forest line, which is 350. And of course, you can find the information in our website, which is kkl.org.il.
Excellent. So I see that you spoke about a whole plethora of places and venues around the country. What about the Gaza periphery? Is JNF doing anything around there?
Well, we as you heard, I spoke about Gilad, Bet Eshel, and also Ofakim.
Okay.
We try to avoid offering activities for the security reasons, obvious security reasons. So not in the Otef necessarily, no.
Okay, so these events you're talking about, the mosaic making event and other music, what days are it happening? Is it happening just on the Wednesday and Thursday of Chol HaMoed, or is it also
Chol HaMoed and the seventh day of Pesach, mm-hmm. where Mimuna is celebrated, which became, you know, national holiday. And where we can start to make the dough, so they would be baking pitas and mofletas. So, yeah.
And what about on the holiday itself and in the Sabbath?
We do not offer activities organized for mm-hmm. Shabbat.
But the parks are open, yes?
The parks are open, and there will be supervisors from, you know, foresters. Forest rangers with making sure that everything is kept, but we do not offer on Shabbat or holiday itself activities.
And how many people are you expecting to visit the JNF parks?
Usually it's like hundreds and thousands of people, and I believe that, with the nice weather and hoping that everything will be calm and peaceful, there will be over hundreds of people.
That sounds fascinating. That's great. Thanks, Michael, for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
That was Michael Ben-Abu from the Keren Kamet Lisrael, the Jewish National Fund. Israel Prize laureate for performing arts, Naomi Polani, was laid to rest this morning. Polani, who was 96 years old, passed away, was a singer, actor, musical producer, editor, and choreographer. She directed military bands at the start of her career and established the iconic band Hatarna Golim, as well as Hamitzitzin. Gil Taib, vice president of CRIF, the umbrella organization of the French Jewish community, has died at the age of 66 after an illness. The organization eulogized him as a tireless activist, fervent defender of Israel and the Jewish community. Well, it's that time of the year again. The notes tucked and folded into the crevices of the Western Wall in Jerusalem are being cleared out ahead of the holiday of Passover. The notes placed on Judaism's holiest site are placed by visitors who believe that their requests and prayers might find their way to God. Western Wall Rabbi Shmuel Rabinovich said that this year they are seeing a lot more notes than in the other years, and he hopes God hears the prayers. The notes are cleared out twice a year, before Passover and before Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year. Taking us up to return headlines is this song by Daniela Spector, Lechiot, To Live.
Bye.
taking a look at the weather, and Shirov conditions are likely to prevail over most of the country. Thursday, temperatures will drop toward the afternoon with haze developing. Friday will be cooler with seasonal temperatures. Temperatures forecast for tonight and tomorrow, Jerusalem 12 to 30, Tel Aviv 15 to 30, Haifa 17 to 28, Tzfat 15 to 26, Tiberias 16 to 35, Be'er Sheva 14 to 34, and then Eilat from 17 tonight going up to 34 degrees centigrade tomorrow. Now, another look at the major news headlines today. As the war cabinet convenes for the third consecutive night, pressure mounts on Israel against escalating a conflict with Iran. Two explosive-laden drones hit near Kiryat Shmona, injuring three people. Rockets are launched toward the Western Galilee. An airstrike in South Lebanon kills a senior Hezbollah commander behind the rocket and missile launchers. On day 193 of the Gaza War, IDF forces target dozens of terrorists as the military prepares for the operation in Rafah. EasyJet cancels all flights to Israel until the autumn. And the weather, much hotter with Shirov conditions across the country. That's the news. Join us again tomorrow night at 8 p.m. on Kan Reka, the foreign languages channel of the Israeli Public Broadcasting Corporation. Watch our 2 p.m. news flash on the Kan English Facebook page. Together with sound engineer Michael Oshvang, this is Aryeh O'Sullivan wishing you a good evening and shalom from Jerusalem.